Okay.
Okay, Boker Tov, everyone. So basically, I was going to kick off today just with a question, yeah? So if on Yom Tov, you've got your, let's say you've got your Kiddush cup, right? And then all of a sudden you look in, you're about to make Kiddush, right? And you look in and, oh no, there's a fly that's landed in your Kiddush cup, right? So the question is, can you just, let's say, go and just, let's say with your hand, just take out the fly, go to the bin, bang, whatever, wherever you want to get disposed of it, and that's it, yeah? We know on Shabbos you wouldn't do that, right? Obviously, but why would you think that should be okay, right? Well, because of the Mishnah we've just learned, yeah. So that in the Mishnah, basically on Yud Daled Amud Beis, right, it talks about Bora on Yom Tov, right, and Beis Hillel, who we paskin like, says that Bora Kedarko, you can just kind of select just in the normal easiest kind of way, yeah. And then Gemara goes and speaks that out, yeah. And says in the situation of where you've got mostly ochel, right, and you've just got a bit of psolus, yeah, and then you could just literally kind of go and take away the psolus if that's how you should do it, in fact, yeah. You just get rid of the psolus, yeah, mm-hmm. and then you can have the ochel, right. So in that case, you would have thought that in my question that I was raising, yeah, it should be just completely fine to take away that fly, throw it away, and you're ready to go, yeah. But basically what we're gonna explore is that in fact this particular case is a bit more problematic for two other reasons, yeah. One of which kind of is not actually maskana, is not a problem, yeah, but it's just an interesting thing that comes out from the sugya. But the other one is actually brought down by the poskim as something which is a problem. So what are the two reasons, yeah? So the first is that there's a Gemara later on, yeah, that's talking about where you've got flour, right, and you've shifted flour, yeah, and then you find a stone in the flour. And the Gemara has discussion about what you should do, yeah, and one of the suggestions is that maybe just, go take the stone out, yeah, with your hands, and that's it, right? And the Gemara says, well, wait a sec, Ravina says, but wait a sec, isn't that kabora? Interesting statement. And Rashi explains, right, what does it mean, kabora? Rashi explains michse kabora. It looks like bora.
On
Yom Tov.
Right.
Right. So that's later on cuff test. Seemingly, it's not a bora problem. So now, in terms of general klalim, why isn't it seems even the way Rashi's explaining it, it's just somehow a problem of appearance or how it looks or what we'll call maybe uvdin dechol, yeah, doing something in the same way as a weekday, yeah. But it doesn't. It seems to be that there's not actually really a bora problem. And basically, the general way that I understand the sugya is that me'ikar adin on Yom Tov bora is okay. It's one of the things which is permitted because of ochel nefesh, yeah. And that being the case, right? It's permitted across the board, yeah. And basically, there shouldn't really be any kind of bora problem, as long as obviously you have to do it everything else is just kind of other issues, like you should do it in a way that causes the least amount of tircha, and that's why there's the discussion in our Gemara about whether there's more ochel, more psoles, yeah, what causes more tircha or not, yeah. That's kind of a called a zaitika inyan, yeah, of making sure on Yom Tov you don't do something, you're not much tircha yourself too much, right. So seemingly this issue, kubo, michse kubo, is also, I think we'll have to say, is some kind of external, let's call it almost external concern, yeah? Be'etzem, the bo itself is okay, midoraisa is permitted, yeah? But there's some other concern which we're going to have to look into and work out where that applies. That's item number one. Item number two is an interesting question, yeah? Which is raised by the Tosafos Rabbi Akiva Eiger, yeah? On our Mishnah. And he asks kind of a pretty, something that maybe is pretty obvious kind of question that maybe we should have asked had we thought thinking about it, which is that. Fantastic. Oh, okay, brilliant. Okay, great. I see someone's on the ball, that's brilliant. So yeah, that's the question, yeah. The question is, right, if the case we're talking about where you're taking psoles from ochel, yeah, so whatever this, the fly in my case, or case of the Gemara later on is talking about a stone or something like that, yeah, that psolus should be muksa, right? So why are we going around and saying what you should be doing is you should be going and taking the muksa away, yeah? Right? Forget Bora a second, yeah? How can you be handling this muksa? That's the question of Tosis from Kibega. Now, the way in which he sets up the question is exactly as Gil actually said. Because, just to speak it out a bit, yeah? I would have thought, okay, maybe here, when we're talking about Psoles, yeah? And Beis Hillel says, a Bora Kedarko, yeah? There's different... Psoles is kind of sometimes a bit of a kind of a relative term, yeah? There can be types of Psoles, right, which just things that you don't want to eat, right? But actually, they're not necessarily muksa. I mean, it could even be that as example, you know, it could be that there's something there which is fitting for another purpose. Let's say animal can eat it or something like that, yeah? But it's just that's not something that you want to eat. So for you, that's Psoles, right? So Rabbi Akiva Eger points out that you can't explain our Mishnah that way. Why? But basically, because of what Gil was saying before. Why? Because our Mishnah, in the Shakli Vitaria, right, wants to suggest what's the situation of where the majority is Psoles, yeah, and you've got a minority of Ochel, yeah? So maybe it's literally a majority, and the Gemara says that can't be. Because if it was literally a majority, then everything should be muksa, basically. So now, wait a sec, that shows us the kind of muks, the kind of things we're talking about, the kind of, you know, Psoles we're talking about, is mamish muks, a kind of Psoles. Because otherwise, our Gemara wouldn't have had that whole question. And it answers Nachnami, and the majority is always Ochel, and it's just a matter of Tircha. So says Rabbi Kivega, that shows us that we're actually talking about, so to speak, hardcore Psoles, let's call it that. It's really Muksa. In which case, Hajkush de la Duchta. Rabbi Kivega asks, how could it be that you can be taking away the Muksa? So that's the second question. So those are the two things we're going to need to deal with, yeah? The second one, just to let you know, Halacha L'maaseh is, I don't think, is a problem. I haven't seen anyone raise it as a problem, right? But we're going to just, I'm going to explain why. So in terms of the first question, yeah? So actually the Ramah brings that Halacha, right? In terms of that question of removing a stone from the flower, yeah? Brings a Yesh Machmirim not to remove the Psoles in that way, right? And Mishnah Brewers tried, you know, comes to explain, it seems as if really one should kind of, you know, there's different ways to explain the Gemara, but according to the simple way I was explaining the Yesh Machmirim, one should be choshesh for that, yeah? So therefore the question is, well, how do you explain, yeah, our thing about removing Psoles based Hillel Kedarka? That's also a halacha brought down, yeah? So if we, on the one hand we're saying you can't remove Psoles with your hand, you know, and the other hand we're saying you should be removing Psoles Kedarko, yeah, when there's just a little bit of Psoles, how do you reconcile the things, yeah? So the Mishnah Berurah himself obviously addresses this, and basically brings down two ways to reconcile. The first is the Chai Adam. So the Chai Adam wants to say that din later on, that where Yesh Machmirim, yeah, not to take away the Psoles, is because it's telling you don't do this, the taking away the Psoles, in the same way in which you would do the rest of the week, yeah? It's kind of a normal way of doing it. And it's kind of uvdin, you call it uvdin d'chol, yeah? Because it's not a bora problem. It's like, we call it, let's say Rashi says michse kabora, but it's more that it looks like you're doing things, actions, and that it's a kind of chulin dika action,
that's,
yeah?
Taking the stone out of the flower?
Yeah, taking the stone out of the flower, yeah. Correct, yeah? So as long as basically you're not doing something where the normative way is to do it during chol in a certain way, yeah, you're not doing that kind of chulindik kind of way, then it's fine. There's no bora problem in taking it out. Okay, that's the first derech, right? The second derech that's brought by the Graz, yeah, and Shulchan Aruch Harav, yeah, is talks about no. That there the problem is, talking about something like flour, yeah, where the way in which you kind of refine flour by taking away the Psoles is something which is done for many days in advance, yeah? And that's the thing, it's kind of something limited to wheat or flour, where you kind of, you're metachin it a long time in advance, yeah? We've seen this concept before in Yom Tov that we're kind of reluctant on a rabbinic level, let's say, to let you do things where, you know, it's the kind of normative thing is to do it many days in advance, yeah?
So, low enough of a kavara. You do with the common.
Right, that's also correct. Exactly, exactly. That's a good point. Within our sukkah itself, actually, we see, as Rabbi Yehuda was pointing out, there's certain implements that you're not allowed to use. You're not allowed to use implements where you do it on an kind of industrial level and you're doing it in large quantities, large amounts in advance. Yeah, this kind of, I suppose this is a branch of that, falls into the same kind of category. Yeah. So what's interesting is the Mishnah Berurah kind of, and the Shaar Tzion and later on in Be'er Halacha brings both of these kind of opinions. But what he does is, in the Mishnah Berurah himself, he applies this same concept to the fly case, which is very interesting, and the Taz apparently brings it, and says that just as you can't remove the pebble, so too, yeah, you, if a fly falls into the drink, says the Mishnah Berurah, you should go and take some of the liquid out with it. Now that's quite interesting, yeah? Because if you think about the two ways and distinctions that we brought, yeah, I could understand, right, maybe, right, that the Chai Adam, I'd say maybe just taking the fly out, you know, with a kind of without taking liquid, but just with a knife or whatever, or a spoon, kind of just taking it out with your hand, yeah, maybe that's the same way in which you do it b'chol, yeah, and therefore, you know, I could say that seems to me to be the simple way of understanding it, is that's just an extension of the Chai Adam's principle, yeah, that would also be a problem, right? But if you talked about the Graz, then in terms of things which are done in like large times in advance, large quantities, it doesn't really seem to be applicable. Yeah. So some people, in fact, I saw Reb Karelitz wants to say for this reason, he thinks that the Mishnah Berurah's Ikar Psak is like the Chai Adam. Yeah. But that may cause problems elsewhere. But without getting into complications, the bottom line seems to be that this does seem to be brought by the Mishnah Berurah, and I saw the other poskim who say that if a fly does fall into your drink for this reason, yeah, you should actually, you know, not kind of think, oh, you're, you know, no bora on Yom Tov, and this is my classic example of taking away the psoles kedarika like Beis Hillel. This particular case you have to be careful with, and you should really go and take some liquid with it, yeah. So that's that. That's true. Yeah, I suppose it's not too difficult. I mean, you know, it's you'd.
Yeah, carefully get one of the legs and shake it off.
I know. Some people might be tempted to kind of like just, you know, use a knife and just skim it to the side and kind of take it off. No. But that's not really taking much liquid with it. So on Shabbos, you know, you take a spoon and probably, you know, so that it's clear that. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the poskim actually don't go with the Chai Adam, go with the other approach, and therefore this doesn't seem to appear in many other places. Rav Karelitz, because the way he's understanding the sugya, this is just a kind of a little gap, because there's not very many nafkaminas on this, by the way, and we looked at this in terms of even Uvdin the whole, by the way. One of the things they say is, you know, an example that Rav Yehuda showed me was straining pasta, yeah, is the poskim seem to agree is fine, yeah. I might have thought, well, you know, that's also kind of, you know, Uvdin D'chol or something like that. But it seems to be that for various reasons, yeah, where you've kind of got no other way of doing it, or where it's a sieving kind of action, yeah, that we don't apply this. So there's not many other nafkaminas in terms of this thing. But Rav Karelitz happens to say, for this very reason, that let's say you've got fish, right, and you want to take away the bones, right? So you know, this is the classic Shabbos question, yeah, how you do that, yeah? So ideally, we're always meant to know that we should, certainly on Shabbos, we should try to get the fish, yeah, and not start removing the bones. Yeah? We should just try to eat the fish. Rav Karelitz says on Yom Tov, right? Also, yeah, because of this concern, yeah, you should try to also take the fish itself and not start removing the bones, yeah, by hand or whatever, because that would be maybe the normative way of doing the thing whole. Anyway, that was an interesting nafkamina. I mean, I'm not sure everyone holds like that, because that's really applying the Chai Adam. You know, obviously, if you're within the Graz, yeah, you know, you don't really do this for many days in advance, taking bones from fish, right? So, okay. But now let's talk about the second question. So, what about getting back to Rabbi Akiva Eiger's kasha, yeah, about muksa, yeah? So, Rabbi Akiva Eiger himself answers this by bringing Yesod from Tosfos, that's earlier on, that wants to say something very interesting, right? Which is that maybe muksa itself is something which could be pushed off on Yom Tov because of Ochel Nefesh. We know that Ochel Nefesh can commit many malachas, yeah? So there is a Tosfos earlier on that wants to suggest this particular situation with ovens, whatever, wants to suggest that maybe you can go and permit moving muksa, right? On Yom Tov because of Ochel Nefesh, in which case maybe that's what's happening here. You want to eat your food, there's some psoles in there, you have to get rid of the psoles, right? So you can take away the psoles, even though it is in fat muksa, because it's pushed off because of Ochel Nefesh.
But because it's the meal, though.
Oh, by the way, so I wanted to add on this. Okay, right. So I was thinking to myself, well, in that case, what about the whole, about the other way, right? Why don't we just say, even if it's not the miut, yeah? Right. It's the whole, you know, say there's most of it is psoles. We would say, oh, there's a problem. You can't take the ochel because it's all muksa, right? But so what? It's ochel nefesh, right? So I was thinking, I'm sure I didn't see anyone address this question, but I think the simple answer is, yeah, that there's a distinction brought in Tosafos at the beginning, that eating muksa is more of a shimish with muksa as opposed to just moving it, is always much more stringent, yeah? We started off from the case of the egg and stuff like that. Yeah, you can't eat it. You know, there's no one was going to suggest that. Oh, but it's ochel nefesh, you know, and it's so it should be pushed off because of ochel nefesh on yontif. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think the answer is because getting a shimish from muksa, we never push off because of ochel nefesh. Maybe moving muksa might be more lenient. Yeah. So
why is the ship?
Oh, well, we're saying the actual ochel itself becomes muksa. Right.
I would thought once you separate it, it wouldn't be though. I hear that once it's connected, but now once you've separated it.
That's itself a good question. Okay, so let's go on to the next question because that leads us very very nicely to the next answer. So. Once again, Rabbi Akiva Eiger wants to address the question of muksa by saying ochel nefesh, so it's fine. Yeah, Rashash, yeah, jumps on Rabbi Akiva Eiger and says he doesn't understand why Rabbi Akiva Eiger has kind of overseen there's a Tosafos in Shabbos. Expect obviously Rabbi Akiva Eiger to know every single Tosafos. So the Tosafos in Shabbos, yeah, seems to and he's talking about a different union, but it's a bit linked to this, yeah, seems to bring in the klal that we see later on. And Rabbi Yahu was miscovering to this when I was speaking out to him, yeah. That we see later on, yeah, there's an idea of bittul, right? So there was a case where we wanted to say the most of it is psoles, and there's a little bit of ochel, yeah? So we want to say the whole thing should be muksa, right? So there's a Tosafos that wants to suggest, yeah, that this should also apply the other way around, yeah? That where you've got a mixture, and you've got most of it is being ochel, and just a little bit of psoles, then the psoles should be rebuttal to the ochel, and in fact, it shouldn't be considered muksa at that point in time, yeah? So that's what the Rishash wants to suggest, yeah? That's the reason why you can take it away, yeah? But then he quotes Tosafos, he says, you know, as part of his answer, he quotes Tosafos that talks about what happens, yeah, when you have something in your hand which you allow, let's say you have muksa in your hand, do you have to let go of it immediately? Have we heard of this Shaila ever? You know, let's say you as an example, right? Classic example, use a hammer to crack a nut, yeah? So you've cracked the nut. Right, and you've now got the hammer in your hand.
Yeah,
it's klim shmulach tadikus. Very good.
You can put it down
whenever
you want.
Oh, okay. Wow, this is brilliant. That's exactly right. Yeah, this is the classic example, right, of the halacha that you said. Yeah, oh, brilliant! Absolutely brilliant. This is what we're going to speak about. Yeah. So once you've finished using the hammer, right? Everyone agrees. Yeah. This kula, right? That even though right now you're not going to use it for nuts anymore, l'chora the hammer is muksa. Yeah. You don't have to put it down. Once it's in your hand, you can put it wherever you want. You know, in a safe place or whatever. Yeah. The question is, how far does that heter extend? Yeah. So there's a machlokus. Yeah. But the bottom line is that the Shulchan Shlomo, Rav Orbach, asks on the Rishash, yeah, because he says that at the end of the day, this, let's say you take away this psoles, so it seems that the Rishash is also admitting that once you've separated it, yeah, and it's not part of the mixture, then it's mamash muksa, yeah, so it's muksa, it's in your hand, albeit beheta, right? But according to some poskim, yeah, then you know, something which is a real muksa machmas gufo, yeah, that heter doesn't apply. You'd have to drop it immediately, yeah. And no one suggested here that you could separate the kadaka but then drop it. You have to, you know, immediately, as soon as you separated it, you know, get rid of it, yeah. So that's his kasha, yeah, on this approach of the Rishash, yeah. And so his answer to that kasha, right, and I think the Chazon Ish also says a similar thing. He says something a bit more radical, yeah, which is to say that actually once it's a mixture, right, and it's batel, then it loses the Chazal was not goes and mux on that thing at all, which is extraordinary. Which means that, i.e., you know, you've got like a stone and mixed around, and you that stone is not considered muksa, not when it's in the mixture, and not once you've separated it either, yeah. So in Achanami, you'd be able to rely on this point that the idea that it's mixed together and you can take it away. And now it's still not muksa, and you can do whatever you want with it. Yeah. But that was the bottom. So you've got Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you've got Rishash, and you've got this kind of variant on the Rishash. But what we were saying before about we were linking in about
the other way that it would become in the case where it was the raw pasolas, then you took the food away.
Yeah.
So. then it would become food afterward. Then it
right. Then it would erupt. So.
So then it goes, but that would add to it, it remains
persolous. Maybe you could say that. Right. I see.
Yeah, with a case like the fly, for example, it's going to become like a mix of mathematics from the extreme. You've got something in your hand. That's also true.
If there's another reason why, it's graph charret or something like that, maybe a fly would be a good example of that. So maybe the fly discussion is you wouldn't want to leave the fly on the table. Fair enough. But the bottom line is, I've not seen anyone who says you need to drop the fly, that's for sure. And anyway, as I said, the main halakha is you have to take it with a liquid. So anyway, it's not going to be on its own. Yeah. So that was more of a kind of, I just was throwing that in because it's just an interesting discussion, not necessarily halakha l'maisa. And bottom line is, just to point out a couple of halakha l'maisa, that I think Rebbe Yashav says that this heter of Bora on Yontif, that only applies to food items, which is interesting, not necessarily kalim and things like that, which you can answer, because it's a question of whether, once you say it's muta because of ochel nefesh, you say migo or across everything else. I think the other poskim don't agree, say it applies across the board, but I guess one should ask Shaila, Rav Zecharia, whatever your rav is, about whether you have to be choshesh for the Rav Eliashav. And then I saw also, because the other point is, there's a question of do you have to try to do it for immediate usage? We know on Shabbos, one of the things about Bora is for immediate usage. So the way we're setting it up here was just to say there's really no Bora on Yom Tov, which basically I think is the Ikka thing. But there is a line of Rishonim and Poskim that wanted to say a bit slightly different, and that it's actually permitted, not completely permitted, but if something, it was only permitted kind of Durabon on, yeah? And therefore, that being the case, the Halakha L'maisa Nafkamina is, they would hold that you wouldn't be allowed to do a selection, let's say, on Yontif night for Yontif day time. Yeah. So I sort of just brought down that ideally we don't paskin that way, because Mishnah Berurah certainly doesn't. But ideally to be choshesh for that would be great. But otherwise, yeah, very rare.
It seems to be like the ochel nefesh thing. It still seems to be like the overriding factor. I mean, we saw a whole bunch of things that we said that we forgot the daf. But like in terms of the chazal permitted because of its end.
I'm not sure though whether this is permitting beginning because of the end, rather than just simply ochel nefesh. No, I mean, because
no, the whole idea is ochel nefesh really about some of those things. Otherwise, you would never.
But permitting the beginning because of the end.